Hello, everybody. This is Maxwell welcoming you to Michael's Saturday Surprise. We're going to have a theme of randomness today and interest. From the singles and doubles collections, I bring you three interesting radio shows. So let's start our first show. Here is Last Man Out and The Case of Dorothy K. Funn. Note, Funn is spelled F-U-N-N, and it's anything but fun in this show. This show was aired on December the 6th, 1953.
The National Broadcasting Company presents Last Man Out, a series of true stories transcribed and documented from the official files of United States government agencies.
All right, Eric, let me hear you recite the verse you memorized.
Shall I stand up, Papa?
Yes, Eric, stand up. Go ahead.
To free the masses from oppression, to free the spirit from its chains, the red flag waves, the red star shines, capitalism's down, the worker reigns. What are capitalists, Papa?
Capitalists, Eric, are what we are not.
Ladies and gentlemen, here is your narrator for Last Man Out, the well-known writer, Mr. Richard English.
Thank you. Tonight, ladies and gentlemen, you're going to hear one of the most important programs in this entire Last Man Out series. There's been a lot of criticism lately directed at government committees which have attempted to expose the communist infiltration of our American schools. Tonight, we're going to prove that communist infiltration did happen here. Our subject tonight is Dorothy K. Funn, a New York City school teacher. Miss Funn joined the Communist Party in 1939, left it in 1946. Her story is not what you'd call a cloak and dagger tale. It happens to be far more important and far deadlier than that. Dorothy Funn actually saw the poison that was being injected into our school systems, the attempt to mold the minds of our children into the communist pattern. Now, the subject report of former Communist Party member, Dorothy K. Funn.
I joined the Communist Party in May of 1939. I was recruited by another teacher with whom I'd become friendly.
About a month and a half after the subject was taken into the party, she was sent to a state communist training school for teachers on a farm in upstate New York. It was a 6-week course. Among other things, the subject was taught how to indoctrinate the school children in the ways and thinking of Communist Party principles. She was taught how to slant everyday problems in such a manner that they always favored the thinking of the Soviet Union.
While we were at this school, we weren't allowed to receive mail or to send it, and we were to remain on the grounds of the school at all times. One night during our 6 weeks training period, we were allowed to go into town to a movie, but we all went as a group and loaded on a truck. I'll never forget the ride back to the school. It was a bumpy one. Well, Madge, 2 more weeks and we'll be back in the big city.
I'm really anxious, Dorothy. I haven't seen my little boy for over a month. He probably won't even recognize me.
How old is he, Madge?
6 and a half, going on 7. Smart one, too. You'd be surprised how progressive he is. And I mean progressive.
That's good.
Hey, Howard.
Your husband in the party?
Oh, sure. Very active, too. That's why I know our little boy is going to grow up to be a big man in the party someday.
Good.
You know, it's the early training that counts, and we're giving him plenty of that. He knows half the nursery rhymes in the Young Pioneer by heart.
And he's only 6 and a half going on 7.
Hmm.
His favorite is the one that goes, eeny, meeny, miny, moe. Workers rob where'er they go. They can stop it if they're not too slow. We young comrades tell them so.
Oh, I remember that one. It was one of the very first ones I ever memorized. Well, your young son sounds like he'll make a brilliant student. What's his name?
Eric.
Eric. Hmm. That's a good name.
The subject got back to New York just in time to start teaching the fall semester at one of the public schools. This was in 1939. There were approximately 40,000 teachers in New York City at that time. How many were communists?
Oh, about 1,000.
What were some of the ways in which a communist teacher was able to influence her students along party line thinking and principles?
Well, there were various ways. Where possible, the teacher slanted history lessons. Slanted everyday problems, too.
Oh, gee, yeah.
All right, students. Students, we'll do our oral reports now. Students, we'll do our oral reports now on world events. First one, Jack Glazer. Please stand and make your report, Jack. Now give us the title and then a 1-minute summary.
Well, my report is called Germany Marches on Poland. Yesterday, the German army marched into Poland and started a war with the people of Poland.
Jack, do you know why?
Because they want more land?
Oh, no, that's not the real reason. The real reason is the Soviet Union. They want to invade the peaceful Soviet Union.
Oh?
Yes, it's very easy to see why they want to invade the Soviet Union. Russia is a real democracy. In a sense, more of a democracy than we are.
See how simple it is? First you start twisting a kid's thoughts.
Now, let's just look at history. Mr. Lincoln fought a civil war to free the Negroes. And there's still Jim Crowism in this country. In Russia, it's different. In Russia, the Negro is his own master. But that's what I meant when I said, in a sense, Russia's more of a democratic nation than America is.
Well, the morale really for Russia in this war, because Russia's defending democracy. Is that right, Mrs. Fun?
Mm-hmm. Yes, as you might put it that way, but there's more to it than that.
What do you mean, Mrs. Fun?
Now the Communist Party line really comes out.
Well, Germany is a totalitarian state, a dictatorship, a type of tyranny, a nation of persecution and hate and prejudice. While on the other hand, Russia's exactly the opposite. Now, we definitely find some persecution, some hate and some prejudice in this country. How do we eliminate it? First, by destroying the big enemy. That would be Germany. And then the time will come for us to clean out our own backyard. Do you see what I mean?
I sure do, Mrs. Fun.
Fine. And Jack, for giving us that splendid oral report, I'm going to give you an A.
How were the party line policies that you were to push forward in your classes in the schoolrooms handed down to you, Dorothy?
Well, we attended section meetings every 2 weeks, at which time we were given specific orders about what party line policies were to be pushed in the classrooms.
Slamming history as it happened was one method of pushing communist influence. Were there other methods?
Oh, yes. Yes, America's past history was also slanted. And then another method was the slanting of ordinary discussion groups. Sometimes we'd have the students discuss questions pro and con, and we, the teachers, would act as moderators. All right, students, all right. All right, students, let me have your attention, please. Today, our panel discussion will be on the Civil War. Virginia, you may begin the discussion. It might be a good idea to state first the reasons why the Civil War began.
It began over slavery in the South. President Abraham Lincoln wanted to free the slave in the South.
I think it might be a good idea for me to inject a thought at this point. Did any of you students know that the South does not recognize President Abraham Lincoln's birthday as a holiday?
Why is that, Mrs. Fun?
Well, Bob, Even though a war was fought to free the slaves, there's still a great deal of slavery going on in the South. For example, the textile workers in the factories.
I don't know about them, but my folks said that a lot of the Negroes remained in the South because they were treated very well by their employers. They even said that some of the Negro women practically raised the children of the white folks. That's how much they were respected and loved.
Your folks are very wrong, Bob. That's what they call propaganda. Oh, well, just a moment, boys and girls. Yes?
Are you Mrs. Fun?
Yes.
My name is Eric Norton, Mrs. Fun. I'm a new boy. We just moved to this district, and I transferred over from PS 45.
All right, Eric. Have you been to the principal's office?
Yes, sir.
Students, I'd like to have you meet a new member of your class, Eric Norton.
Hi.
Hi. All right, Eric, you may sit down now. Oh, Eric.
Yes, sir?
Is your mother a school teacher?
Yes, sir. She teaches over in the Queens district.
Is her first name Madge?
That's right, Mrs. Fun. Madge.
I'm glad to have you with us, Eric. I think you're going to like this class very much, Eric. Very much.
The subject continued teaching and continued attending the party discussion group meetings every 2 weeks. How were these groups organized?
Well, everyone in the group was a teacher from some public school. We had a chairman, a treasurer, and an educational director.
Let me ask you this. Were school children ever used in communist demonstrations?
Oh, yes, yes. But usually they were children whose parents were already sympathizers or party members. The May Day Parade was one of the best places to employ children for the family effects on those watching the parade. I marched in my first May Day Parade in 1940.
Mr. Spahn.
Well, yes, Miss Aaron.
Are all the children here?
Well, no, there's one missing, Eric Norton. He should be here any moment.
We won't be able to wait much longer. The parade's about to start.
Well, he promised me he'd be here. He's very enthusiastic about the whole thing, Mr. Aaron. Well, you know Eric, don't you?
Yes, I know him. All right, students. Don't move out of line and hold those banners up straight when you march. Make sure they can be read. And now remember where you're to march, next to the older people. Form a single line on either side and march next to them. Mrs. Fun, we can't wait much longer for that Norton boy. Mm-hmm. Well, there it goes. All right, students, march out in the street and take your places, single file.
Mrs. Fun!
There you are, Eric. I was so afraid you were going to miss it. Why, hello, Madge.
Hello, Dorothy. Nice to see you again.
It's been a long time. We better hurry. The parade's just about ready to start. We'll talk later, Madge. Do you have your placard, Eric?
I'm right here.
All right, hold it high, and remember, we want everybody to be able to see it and to read it. Harped on discrimination and prejudice as one thing that communism would do away with. Yet we practice certain discriminations right there in the public schools. We discriminated against students and also teachers who were not favorable to the movement.
Mrs. Fun, have you met Mrs. Goodman, the new history teacher?
I met her at lunch in the cafeteria yesterday. Seems like a nice person.
She's not.
What do you mean?
She hasn't got one progressive idea in her stupid head. She's what I call a total loss.
I see.
She might be dangerous. We'll have to keep a close watch on her. She's the kind that runs and talks. I didn't say much to her. I just listened.
What about her family?
Oh, conservative stock. I think I'll give a little party and ask everyone but her.
Mm-hmm. I see.
I'll also think of some other ways to isolate her. We've definitely got to make her feel she's not wanted around here. Maybe she'll ask for a transfer.
Well, that's probably the best way to handle it.
You see, we've got this school pretty well organized right now. I hate to have anyone come along and mess up all the good we've done. We've got to get rid of her as soon as possible. I know a liberal sub I'd like to see take her place. I'll see what kind of strings I can pull to get her in over here.
Mm.
But in the meantime, Mrs. Fun, pass the word along to the others. Our objective? Get rid of Mrs. Goodman.
It wasn't long before Mrs. Goodman was out. The subject continued teaching until 1943, when she resigned from the school system, went to work as an administrative secretary for a Minorities Labor Victory Committee, then as a legislative representative for the National Minorities Congress, and later still as a representative for the New York State Political Action Committee in Washington, D.C. In 1946, the subject, who had slowly been growing fed up, left the Communist Party.
I left Washington and returned to New York and applied for another teaching position with the New York City school systems.
The subject was reinstated, resumed her teaching job the early part of 1947. When the House Committee on Un-American Activities began its investigation of communist infiltration into the school systems, the subject testified before them, naming names and giving any and all information she had of the Communist Party and its working in our schools.
The committee will come to order. Proceed, Mr. Counsel.
Mrs. Fun, you have been a member, or had been a member for quite some time, of the Communist Party here in the city of New York. There was quite an audience in this room this morning, and there is quite an audience here this afternoon. Is it correct you recognize quite a number of the people in the audience as former members of the Communist Party when you were?
Yes.
They are here today in this audience?
Yes.
I'm not sure whether you have ever read that provision, have you, under which this committee operates?
No, I have not.
This law says, may I read?
Yes.
The Committee on Un-American Activities, as a whole or by subcommittee, is authorized to make investigations of the extent, the character, the objectives of un-American propaganda activities in the United States, and the diffusion within the United States of subversive and un-American propaganda that is instigated from foreign countries or of a domestic origin, and attacks the principle of government as guaranteed by our Constitution. Now, did you hear any question or observe any act by this committee which, in your judgment, was a trespass upon your civil rights in any way or your rights as an American citizen?
Well, no. You've shown only one thing, that you're interested in getting at the facts. You're interested in helping to eliminate the causes which have made this subversive activity possible. Well, I don't think in any instant you've infringed upon my rights as a citizen. And I've been very happy to come here and give any assistance I've given.
Mrs. Fun, speaking for myself, I say you have been a most informative witness. I am sure the information you have given to this committee will be most valuable. You have added a great deal to the information that the committee has already assembled. Unless there is something further, Mr. Chairman.
Nothing further. The committee will stand in recess until 10 o'clock tomorrow morning.
Dorothy Fun still has a tremendous feeling for the rights of the minorities. That was one of the reasons she joined the Communist Party. But she realized in time that the Communist Party wasn't the answer to what she wanted. She realized that the party used the problems of the minority to spread its own gospel. And when she found that out, she quit the party. She has resumed her teaching career, however. And it wasn't an easy road back. At times it was lonesome. But she made it. And Dorothy Fun is another good example that an ex-communist can come back. We've all been waiting for, when we'll ask tonight's subject some of the questions that all America has wanted to ask.
What is being done now, Dorothy, to rid the school systems of communists and communist teachers and communist training? What's being done here in New York, for example?
Well, here in New York, a very fine program has been initiated by Dr. Jansen in weeding out communist school teachers in the New York City school system. And he has received the help of a council here in New York who carries on these investigations.
Would you say that this investigation has been fairly successful?
I would say that it has been very successful.
Did you ever have any reaction from parents when it was learned you had been a communist school teacher?
No direct reaction.
I see.
No.
It wasn't known until 4 years after you broke the party that you had ever been a communist. Is that correct?
I would say yes and no. It wasn't openly known, but I think that many people by that time had considered me a member of the Communist Party.
Well, how was your life affected when you broke with the party? Was it like being in a vacuum?
It was very much so. I was sort of on the moon, alone for a while, since I had severed all connections with my former friends and many of my relatives in going into this Communist Party activity, so that upon my return. And, of course, I was no longer welcome with those who still were members of the Communist Party, with whom I also did not wish to associate.
I see. All right. Tell me now, what were the Communist Party instructions regarding teachers' relations with members of the PTA?
Their instructions were to for each teacher to make it a must to attend the Parent-Teacher Association meetings and to guide the actions and policies of that organization. Further, wherever possible, they were to become particularly friendly and close to those members of the PTA who looked like good material for outside work on the political scene, I might say.
Yes.
Looking, of course, toward the last thing of recruiting them into the Communist Party.
Well, thank you very much.
Ladies and gentlemen, Mr. English will be back in just a moment. For security reasons, certain names in the subject report of Dorothy Fun were changed. Each week, Last Man Out will expose a different phase of communism. Next week's subject report will be that of a subject who served the communist state behind the Iron Curtain. Now, once again, Mr. English.
Tonight, I want to speak to the ex-communists who are listening. I know how tough it is to be on the outside looking in. For 17 years, I was deaf. It's only 8 years ago I had my hearing restored in one ear. So I know what it's like to come back, and that's what you want to do. If you've been afraid that your boss and friends might find out that you're an ex-communist and wouldn't understand what took you in and what took you out of the party, why don't you write me? Maybe I can help. Just write Dick English, care of NBC, Hollywood, California, and mark it personal. Good night.
Thank you. Next week, Richard English will bring to our microphones the true story of another former member of the Communist Party, documented and transcribed from the official files of United States government agencies. Last Man Out is an NBC Radio Network production by Richard English, directed by Andrew C. Love and written by Richard George Pedicini. Our musical score is composed and conducted by Dmitry Tiomkin, Academy Award winner. December is the month of the joyous holiday season. It's also the month of the highest number of motor vehicle accidents. Take a safe driving tip from the truck drivers who are taught to drive ahead of themselves. Take extra care on the highways during the holiday season. Use courtesy, caution, and common sense. This is the NBC Radio Network.
All right, folks. That was Last Man Out and the Case of Dorothy K. Funn, aired on December the 6th, 1953. And now, let's hear our second program. It's entitled Fantasy Audition, and it is aired on August the 23rd, 1947. Enjoy Donald Duck, by the way.
Presenting the NBC Story Shop, with stories for young people as told by Craig McDonald, and our special guest for today, in person, Donald Duck.
What's the matter, huh?
Well, nothing's the matter, Donald, but the storyteller doesn't know that you're coming to the story shop today, and we want to surprise him. See?
Oh, I see.
So what we'll do is go up to the door of the story shop on our tiptoes. That's right. Like this. And here we are at the front door of the story shop. Now you step up and rap on the door. And when the story teller answers, he'll get a big surprise. Now you'll rap real hard. Nice now.
Okay.
Who's that out there banging on my door? A giant? I said, is that a giant out there?
Surprise!
Well, it's my old friend Donald Duck. Won't you come into the story shop?
Sure! Say, this is a pretty nice place you got here. Is this really the story shop?
Yes, Donald, this is really the story shop where all the stories are told.
Boy. Do we all have books?
Yes, we do have a lot of books, and every one of them's a storybook.
Goodness gracious. Well, I have a story, too.
You have a story, too?
Uh-huh. Yeah. And I wrote it right here. Donald Duck's Vacation Adventures. I wrote it myself. Would you like to read it?
Well, if you wrote it, I'd be delighted to read it, Donald. Hey, let me see it. Uh-huh. Donald Duck's Vacation Adventures. Well, it looks very interesting.
Oh, it is, it is. Go on. Read some of it.
All right, now let's see here. Uh-huh. It says, this story was written by Donald Duck, a very intelligent duck, and a movie star.
That's me. Go on.
He has just finished making a movie in Hollywood with his dear friends Mickey and Goofy, and Dinah Shore, and Edgar Bergen, and Mortimer Snurd, Charlie McCarthy, and Luana Patton. And this movie is called Fun and Fancy Free. And because Donald Duck did such a good job in this movie, he was given a vacation. And the story which you are about to hear took place during that vacation. And this is how it all happened. As Donald was driving from Hollywood to New York in his little car... Donald was just as happy as could be. And why not? He was going on his vacation. And he didn't have a worry in the world until he started to cross the desert and into the Indian country. But even then, Donald wasn't really scared, because as everyone knows, Donald Duck is one of the bravest ducks in the whole wide world. All across the desert, there wasn't a sign of an Indian. But you know how clever those Indians are. One minute, Donald was all alone driving his car, and the next minute, he was surrounded. There were Indians to the front. There were Indians to the rear. Indians to the right. And Indians to the left. But was Donald Duck afraid?
Yeah, I'm not afraid.
10,000 Indians surrounded the brave Donald, but was he afraid?
Yeah, I'm not afraid.
Donald Duck was fighting mad. Fast as lightning, Donald flew into action. He leaped from his seat and stood right up in the car as the arrows came flying at him. The Indians were pouring arrows at the brave duck, and they were coming closer and closer and closer, but the brave little duck was too smart for them. He reached out and grabbed the arrows as they came his way. Yes, sir, Donald was fighting mad. And just as soon as Donald had caught enough arrows to fill both hands, he leaped from the car and charged the fierce Indians. Donald ran at the Indians faster and faster and faster and faster, and as he ran, he tossed the arrows back at the Indians. And boy, oh boy, you should have seen those Indians run away when Donald Duck started tossing their arrows back at them. They just couldn't take it, and all 10,000 turned tail and ran away as fast as they could. Imagine, single-handed, Donald Duck had defeated 10,000 Indians.
Well, gosh, Donald, that was some story. Did you really write that?
I sure did.
Uh-huh. And did that adventure really happen to you?
Absolutely. Now, chapter two.
Uh-huh. All right. Now, let me see. Chapter two in The Vacation Adventures of Donald Duck, written by Donald Duck. And this is how chapter two begins. After Donald chased away the Indians who had attacked him, he started back to his little car, which stood in the road on the desert. He planned to get in and drive along on his vacation. But when Donald got there, he saw that the Indians had fixed him up. But good.
Well, I'm a good dog.
Every single one of Donald's four tires had been punctured by an arrow.
Donald didn't like that at all, but there wasn't much that he could do about it. So he started to walk. What the heck? A little thing like four flat tires couldn't bother him. And so he started off across the desert, singing as he went. And before long, Donald came to the mountains which stood at the edge of the desert. But they didn't bother him. He began to climb the mountains. Up, up, up he went. And he didn't have a worry in the world until a storm began to blow. storm grew worse and worse. But that storm didn't bother Donald. And you know why. It just rolled over him like water off a duck's back. But it was growing a little windy, so Donald stepped into a cave in the side of the mountain. It was very quiet and dry in there. And best of all, the cave smelled so good. Donald sniffed the air.
Food,
and so the brave little duck began to take a gander, a look around the cave. And what do you know? Why, right there in the back of the cave was a great big fireplace. And over that fireplace, there was a great big juicy steak. Donald looked at the steak hungrily. It was the biggest steak he'd ever seen. And then he opened the oven. And there was a great big apple pie. It was the biggest apple pie he had ever seen. And there on the table was a great big glass of milk. It was the biggest glass of milk he had ever seen. And the table and the chairs, they were the biggest he had ever seen. And that steak, why, it was big enough to feed a giant.
A giant? Uh-oh, a giant. A giant must live here, and this must be his supper.
And sure enough, a giant did live there, in the cave. And that was his supper. But was Donald Duck afraid of the giant?
Yeah, I'm not afraid.
And so Donald had the most wonderful feast. He ate the great big juicy steak. And he ate the great big apple pie. And he drank the great big glass of milk. But just then, who should Donald hear entering the cave but the giant?
Uh-oh.
But did Donald get up and run away? I should say not. He couldn't. He was too full. And so he sat there while the giant came toward him.
Fee, fi, fo, fum. Hee, hi, ho, hum. I'm a most amazing guy. A most amazing guy, am I? Fee, fi, fo, fum. Hee, hi, ho, hum. I'm the stuff I'm telling you, for here's what I can do. I can change myself into an elf, fly up high like the birdies. I can disappear into atmosphere, because I know the magic word is. Fee, fi, fo, fum. Hee, hi, ho, hum. I'm a most amazing guy with my feet. Five, four, five. Oh, you liked that, did you?
I saw that. That was so quiet.
Well, you... Hey, what are you doing here? Who are you? And what's happened to my supper? I'm going to grab you right by the neck. You ate my supper.
Uh-huh.
Okay, if you ate my supper, you got to sing.
What?
That's right. You ate my supper. Now you got to sing.
You mean I want to sing for my supper? Okay. Chirama, 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 and chirama, chirama.
No, no. I don't mean sing like that. I mean you better start talking. Who are you?
My name is Donald Duck.
Donald Duck? Not the Donald Duck. The movie star?
That's me, Chuck.
You're the movie star, Donald Duck? Well, isn't that something?
Yes, isn't that something?
And why did you eat my supper? If you're a movie star, why don't you buy your own supper? kind of coming around and bothering poor old giants like me. You ought to be ashamed of yourself.
I'm sorry.
Well, okay. If you're sorry, it's all right, I guess. But there's something you could do if you wanted to.
What's that?
Well, Mr. Duck, I've always admired you as an actor. I'm a fan of yours.
Oh, thank you, thank you.
Oh, you're welcome. So I sort of wonder if you would act for me. You know, maybe you could recite for me. Oh, gee, thanks. You could pretend you're on a stage, you know. And with that, brave Donald Duck ran out of the cave. Smart little fella had fooled the giant.
Wow, that was some adventure, Donald. That was really some adventure.
Yes, it was. Yes, it was.
Mm-hmm. First, you fight off 10,000 Indians, and then you outwit a fierce giant.
Well, it was nothing. It was nothing at all. What do you mean the next chapter?
The next chapter? Yeah. Oh, yes, yes, yes. Chapter 3 in The Vacation Adventures of Donald Duck.
That's a real good one. Read that, Bob. You want to read one.
All right, Donald. It says here, after Donald left the giant's cave, he went and hid in a tree trunk until the storm ended. By that time, it was morning, and the sun was shining. So Donald got out of the tree and started over the mountains.
Oh, what a beautiful moment! Oh, what a beautiful day! I'm going to see it in the forest! And we can storm in my way!
Donald didn't have a worry in the world until he saw the smoke from the campfire.
Uh-oh! What's that? What a smoke! What's that?
On his hands and knees, the brave little duck approached the campfire. There was a camp, all right, but it was deserted. No one was there. At least that's what Donald thought until he heard a voice.
Distress.
And there, over in a bunch of trees, was a beautiful maiden in distress, tied hand and foot.
Help! Help! Don't be afraid! I'll save you! Here, let me untie the rope! There, now you're free!
Oh, thank you so much! I'm so happy I could sing!
And boy, oh boy, oh boy! Don't you want to touch?
This is too good to be true. Can this be paradise? Can it be you so close to me? I never knew what angels look like. Looking at you,
Shark. Monster Mom.
I never knew what angels look like. Looking at you, don't spread your wings and fly away. But if you're only passing through, then take me to heaven with you. Or is this a dream? Think you can be
And as you might imagine, Donald fell head over heels for the beautiful young girl.
You are so very brave. Thank you for untying me. But now we must hurry and get out of here before the bandit comes. He's a bad man, a desperate bandit. He captured me, and he has carried me here into the mountains. And he is going to hold me until my father pays in gold. Now we must hurry before he comes here and finds us. Oh, here comes the bandit now.
What's going on here? Who set you free, my beauty, huh? Who's this silly-looking dot I should have ought to wring his neck?
Says
for me.
And who are you?
I am the toughest bandit on all the mountains. You skinny little sawed-off runt. What have you got to say for yourself, huh?
Sticks and stones will rot my bones, but words will never hurt me.
Why, I'm going to bust you wide open.
Well, just a moment, just a moment. Give up your fist and fight like a man.
Yeah, well, if I'm going to put up on my fist and fight like a man, what are you going to do, eh? You ain't got no man. You're a duck, and I'm going to see to it you're a dead duck. Now look out, because here I come.
And, boy, did that bandit ever take a swipe at Donald. But was Donald afraid?
I'm not afraid, the big bum.
And then when Donald called the bandit a big bum, the bandit took a poke at Donald, and he nearly hit him right on the chin. Donald just ducked away in time. And then Donald began to work out a scheme in his head. He knew he was braver than the bandit, but he couldn't hit the bandit. So what did he do? He used his head. Donald backed up from the bandit as far as he could go. And then, aiming himself at the bandit, he ran at him just as hard as he could. And was that bandit ever surprised when Donald's head hit him right in the stomach?
No!
Donald knocked the bandit out cold as a fish. And then the brave little duck and the beautiful young girl ran as fast as they could down the mountainside to the home of a friendly farmer who let the beautiful girl use his telephone.
Hello. Hello, Daddy? Yes, yes, I'm safe. I was rescued by a very brave duck. And, oh, Daddy, he's so handsome. You have no idea. And so I want you to come out here and get me right away. And don't forget to bring a big bag full of shining gold as a reward for this handsome, brave young duck. I love to hang around the lazy countryside with nature's gang around the lazy countryside where the crickets you don't hear in the city keep a humming in your ear, oh so pretty, and it's just too much for words, listening to the chorus of the birds. I like to stay around the lazy countryside, just kind of play around the lazy countryside. Oh, what fun in taking the sun in and to roam the spaces wide. It's the place for me. Gee, it's great to
My goodness, Donald, did that adventure really happen to you, too?
Sure.
But how come you didn't stay there with that beautiful girl? Wasn't she beautiful enough?
Oh, she was so tall. But she was fat. We were stronger and went faster.
Yes, Donald, I guess you ducks do love travel and adventure. And I want to thank you for coming to our story shop this morning and helping me tell some of your amazing adventures. It's been swell. And thank you, Donald Duck.
Thank you, Frank McGuire. The pleasure has been all mine.
And now, fellas and girls, I'd like for you all to meet the young man who is the voice of Donald Duck. The very same Donald Duck you see in your movie theaters, and the voice you heard today. His name is Clarence Nash, and here he is.
Good morning, boys and girls, and thank you, Craig McDonald. But you know, my friends all call me Ducky Nash.
Okay, then. Ducky it is. How long have you been doing the voice of Donald Duck, Ducky?
Ever since Donald was born, Craig.
Eh?
I'm the one and only duck. My voice is. My first picture was made, or Donald's was, for Walt Disney back in 1934.
Uh-huh.
And the last picture was just finished a short time ago.
Fun and fancy free?
Yes. We had a wonderful time making it. There was all kinds of fun with Charlie McCarthy and Edgar Bergen, Mortimer Snurd and the cast, and of course those two lovely ladies, Dinah Shore and Luana Patton,
uh-huh.
And my old friend, Mickey Mouse and Goofy. It was really quite a party.
Oh boy, I bet it was. Yeah, one of my favorite songs from Fun and Fancy Free is that giant song, Fee-Fi-Fo-Fum.
Yes, I think that giant song is going to be very popular. And then so will those two others we heard this morning, Lazy Countryside and Too Good to Be True.
Well, Ducky, if you ask me, I think the picture's a grand treat for all.
Well, I hope so. We all do our best out at Walt Disney to give folks the best fun and enjoyment that we know how.
Well, Ducky Nash, I can't tell you how much you've enjoyed having you here in our story shop. And if you're ever around this way again, you'll be sure to stop in. Will you do that?
You bet, Craig McDonald. Oh, yes. Donald wants to know, what's your next picture? What's your next story for next week?
Oh, my goodness. I almost forgot, Donald. My story for next week is a famous one.
What?
Uh-huh. It's the story of a famous sailor of the Arabian Nights. The story of Sinbad the Sailor.
Okay.
So, Donald, I want all my friends to be sure to be listening next week at this very same time. So long. That's fine, Donald. Until then, this is your storyteller, Craig McDonald, saying goodbye till next time, fellas and girls.
Donald Duck's Vacation Adventures was an original story written for radio by Richard E. Davis. The Story Shop was produced in Radio City, New York by Art Richards. Eve Young was the beautiful girl, Ollo was at the organ, and as always, your storyteller was Craig McDonald. Fun and Fancy Free will be shown in your neighborhood theaters in September and October. And don't forget, boys and girls, next week Craig McDonald will tell another wonderful story, The Adventures of Sinbad the Sailor. That's next Saturday at this very same time over this very same station on The Story Shop. Hey there, what are you doing about your child's education? You know, most school systems weren't in very good shape last year, and too many boys and girls were cheated out of a year of good schooling. If this was the case in your local schools, what have you done about it since school closed? In a great many communities, parents have banded together and fought for better school conditions. And in a great many cases, they've been successful. Better wages have brought better teachers. And improved school buildings and equipment have also served to attract capable men and women who prefer good working conditions. If there are improvements to be made in your school system, get after them today. Don't wait until school opens. Now make those few weeks count. Remember, you get what you pay for.
This is Charles F. McCarthy speaking, and this is NBC, the National Broadcasting Company.
Well, folks, that was Fantasy Audition, aired on August the 23rd, 1947. I wonder how you really enjoyed that show, because I found that Donald Duck kind of strange, but funny. Now, friends, it's time for our last show. An interesting story, I hope. Here is Stories Are for Fun and The Horse That Had His Picture in the Paper. There's no air date or any of that stuff, so on with the show.
Let's listen to Stories Are for Fun, brought to you transcribed from Radio Television, the University of Texas, in cooperation with the Austin Junior League and the Austin Public Schools. Today's story takes place in the largest city in the whole United States, a city with millions of people and automobiles and trucks. It has rivers and big bridges, and the way it's located, you can cross a bridge and be in another state. One look at your map and you know we're talking about
New York City. And whether you've ever been there or not, the chances are you've heard about it on radio or seen pictures of it in books and movies or on television.
But even if you've been to New York, you probably didn't meet the interesting character who is the hero of our story. He's the horse who had his picture in the paper. That's the name of our story, and here to tell you all about the hero's adventures is storyteller Colleen Harden.
The city of New York is so crowded with tall buildings that you must tilt your head back and look straight up to see the sky. So, of course, there isn't room for green fields or fat red barns. Nearly everybody lives upstairs, even the horses. In one of the buildings lived a horse named Joey. Joey was a contented horse. He liked his stall, which was sunny, with a window to look out of. He liked working for Mr. Pulaski, who sold fruits and vegetables to city people. Joey liked the folks he met as he pulled the vegetable cart about the city streets, and he was fond of his friend, the Percheron. A Percheron is a big horse who hauls heavy loads. But getting back to Joey, he was as contented as a horse can be, until the day Brownie moved into the right-hand stall next to his. Brownie was a police horse, and he never let anyone forget it. He was very proud of being on the police force, and as he was very, very proud because he once had his picture in the paper, he treated the other horses coolly because they were ordinary fellows who pulled carts like Joy or hauled big wagons like the Percheron. He himself carried a police sergeant on his back. "It isn't just any horse who gets on the force," he told Joy haughtily. "We're picked for our brains, you know. Besides, I'm a hero. That's why I had my picture in the paper." "Is that good?" asked Joey, who had lived a sheltered life. "Of course it's good," said Brownie. "It got my sergeant a promotion, so now he has more money in the bank, and I have more apples with my lunch." Joey didn't care about the apples. Mr. Pulaski gave him all the apples he wanted. But he knew Mr. Pulaski had 6 children at home who were always needing new shoes, and that sometimes he worried about money. "A vegetable cart is no gold mine," Joey often heard him say. Now, Joey wished he could have his picture in the paper. Maybe then Mr. Pulaski would get a promotion, too. He thought and he thought, but he couldn't decide how to go about it. "How do you get to be a hero?" he asked Brownie timidly. "Save a man's life, like me," Brownie answered. "Did you rescue him from a burning building?" asked Joey. "Not at all," snorted Brownie. "I saved his life by not stepping on him. When a crowd pushed him, he fell under my feet, and I stood as still as a statue, the way they taught me in school." The Percheron, who was listening, nearly strangled on his oats. "Think of the lives I've saved," he whispered to Joy. "Thousands and thousands. Why, the city is filled with people I haven't stepped on." But Joy didn't laugh. He just went on wondering how he could be a hero and get his picture in the paper. Whenever he saw a crowd, he trotted toward it, hoping somebody would fall under his feet. But Mr. Pulaski always pulled him back to the curb again. And though he stood quiet as a statue while Mr. Pulaski sold the vegetables, that didn't make him a hero. It just brought him pats on the nose and an extra carrot or two. Then one day he thought his chance had come. Mr. Pulaski was selling a cauliflower to a woman in front of an apartment house when suddenly a little boy just learning to walk came down the apartment house steps ahead of his nurse and wobbled into the busy street where cars and trucks were whizzing by. The nurse called to the little boy, but he didn't stop. The lady pinching the cauliflower was too busy to notice, and Mr. Pulaski was too busy with the lady. But Joey saw, and quick as a flash, he reached out and caught the little boy by the seat of his bright blue sunsuit. Now I'm a hero, he thought to himself, and surely my picture will be in the paper. But the little boy began to cry, and the nurse came shrieking, help! And the lady dropped the cauliflower and said, I do believe your horse bit that child. Mr. Pulaski hadn't been watching, so he couldn't explain that Joey was only rescuing the little boy from the cars and trucks. Mr. Pulaski apologized to the nurse, and on the way down the street he scolded Joey. A vegetable cart isn't a gold mine, he said crossly, and now you have lost me a customer. And he didn't even give Joey an apple with his lunch. Joey was quite downhearted, and he asked the percherin that night, how am I to get my picture in the paper? Join a circus, snapped the percheron impatiently. He was fond of Joey, but he believed that Brownie was putting foolish ideas into Joey's head. Join a circus, Joey thought to himself. Why, yes, circus horses do get their pictures in the paper. I could learn to walk on my hind legs and do tricks. But when he practiced walking on his hind legs in the stall, he frightened the man who was bringing the oats. And after he tried to bow and kneel on one leg like circus horses do, he ached so badly that he limped as he pulled the cart. So he had to give up the idea of becoming a circus performer. Then one day, this wanting to help Mr. Pulaski got Joey into trouble. It was a pleasant morning in June. Joey was jogging along, enjoying the sunshine, while Mr. Pulaski, from the front seat of the cart, was singing out, strawberries, strawberries, nice, fresh strawberries. A lady called from the upstairs window of a house, and Mr. Pulaski, stopping the cart, climbed up the steps to sell her two boxes of berries. He left Joy standing still as a statue. But just as Mr. Pulaski was counting his change in the hall, Joey heard a sound that made his ears stand straight on his head. It was the exciting sound of trumpets and drums and marching feet. A parade, thought Joey. He knew about parades. Brownie had often told him that the horse who led one was bound to have his picture in the paper. Lifting his feet smartly and trailing the reins to one side, off he trotted in the direction of the music. He reached the corner just as the marchers reached it, too. The crowds watching were too surprised to stop him. Even the policemen were too late. Before they knew it, Joy was there at the head of the line, ready to lead the parade up the avenue. The only trouble was that he had taken a left turn while the parade was trying to turn right. There he was in the way of everybody. The fife players stopped so suddenly that the buglers stepped on their heels. The drummers stepped on the heels of the buglers, and the men who were only marching stepped on the heels of the drummers. The whole parade came to a standstill. When Mr. Pulaski ran at the corner, the policeman was holding Joey by the bridle. The crowd was laughing, and the paraders were very angry. It was a dreadful moment. Mr. Pulaski explained that Joey meant no harm. So the policeman let them go, and the parade started up again. But Mr. Pulaski seemed so frightened that Joey realized he had made a terrible mistake. Whatever has got into you, Joey? Asked Mr. Pulaski. A vegetable cart is no gold mine, but you'll make me poorer than I am if you don't behave. Then what will happen to my six children? Poor Joey, he felt very sad. I'll never be a hero, and I'll never amount to anything, Joey confided to the percherin. I'm just an ordinary city horse with no talent. It's too bad for Mr. Pulaski. You're a good fellow, Joey, said the percherin. Just cheer up and get that nonsense out of your head about newspaper pictures. Do your duty and everything will be all right. So Joey made the effort to be cheerful and obedient, and Mr. Pulaski didn't have to scold him again. But things weren't going too well with the vegetable cart. The vegetables and fruit wilted from the heat, and no one in the city would buy them. But Mr. Pulaski's six children ate just as much as ever and needed as many pairs of shoes. One morning, earlier than usual, Mr. Pulaski came into the stable and took Joey out to the cart. We're going to New Jersey, Joey, he said, as he fastened the harness and put a hat over Joey's ears to keep off the sun. I've heard of a place where I can get fresh vegetables cheaper. We'll drive over and look at them. Joey was pleased to be having an adventure. In spite of the heat, he trotted along briskly in the direction that Mr. Pulaski told him was New Jersey. Finally, he trotted up a sort of a hill and all of a sudden found himself on a great bridge flung across the water. There seemed to be a big crowd gathered there, and the cars were moving slowly. Joey hurried a little so he could see what was going on. But the rest of the traffic was so slow, he finally had to stop. While he and Mr. Pulaski were wondering why the cars and trucks were all coming to a standstill, a man with a red carnation in his buttonhole stepped up to them. He wore a silk hat and carried a bouquet of flowers. Behind him came several other men, some with cameras, some with pencils and papers. "Congratulations," said the man with the silk hat. "These flowers are for you. You have also won a $50 prize. What is your name, sir?" "Pulaski," the cart driver said, much surprised. "Please, I don't understand." "We are from the Department of Bridges," the man said, "and this prize goes to the millionth vehicle to pass the end of the bridge. Your cart was the millionth." "We're reporters," said one of the men carrying pencil and paper. "There's quite a story here for our papers. You see, we had expected a car or a truck or a bus to get the award. We didn't count on a horse and cart." "What's your horse's name?" asked another reporter. And when Mr. Pulaski told him, he wrote down Joey. Then he shook hands with Mr. Pulaski, and several people cheered. It was almost as good as leading a parade. The first man put the flowers in front of the cart and handed Mr. Pulaski $5 $10 bills. Then the men with the cameras crowded around, and cars stopped to watch, and people shouted cheerful remarks. "Smile now," said a cameraman, "and hold on to your horse. We especially want a good shot of him." "That's quite a bonnet he's wearing," said another, "but he needs just one more touch. He's the hero of the day, you know." He whispered something to the man in the silk hat. Then that gentleman took the red carnation out of his buttonhole and tucked it behind Joey's ear. "Now don't let him move," said the cameraman. But Joey wouldn't have moved for anything. He stood still as a statue and looked straight into the camera. Afterwards, the reporters patted his neck and complimented Mr. Pulaski on driving such a well-behaved horse. The silk-hatted man said, "We're holding up traffic, I'm afraid. You'll have to move on. But look in the papers tomorrow. You'll be sure to see yourself." When they got back to the stable that night, Joey didn't say a word to the other horses about his adventure. Something might go wrong. Maybe the papers wouldn't use the picture after all. Besides, he was afraid his hat wasn't really becoming. Next morning, Mr. Pulaski burst in, waving half a dozen newspapers. "Look, Joey," he cried, "here we are. We're famous." He opened one of the papers, and there, almost on the front page, was a picture of Joey, handsome as a circus horse, with his hat becomingly tilted and the red carnation behind his ear. Underneath the picture it said, "New York, only one horse town after all. Cart horse Joey wins $50 prize." All the horses craned their necks over the stalls to see. Even Brownie was impressed. "But that's not all, Joey. Maybe a vegetable cart is a gold mine after all. A friend of mine saw that picture and telephoned me right away. He's got a farm in the country, and he needs somebody to help him in the city. He'll bring me fresh vegetables every day, and you and I will sell them. Now I won't mind if my 6 children grow so fast out of their shoes." My, but Joey was happy. He said later to the percheron, "It would have been nice to have been a real hero, but I expect this is nearly as good. Anyhow, I got Mr. Pulaski his promotion."
Hooray for Joey, and goodbye to you until next week. Stories Are for Fun is presented by Radio Television, the University of Texas, in cooperation with the Austin Junior League and the Austin Public Schools. The stories are prepared for broadcast by Jane Rowley and Darcy Norris and directed by Blair Wilkins. The Horse Who Had His Picture in the Paper is written by Phyllis McGinley and published by J.B. Lippincott Company. Permission to use the story granted by Curtis Brown Limited. This is Jim Morris speaking, transcribed from the University of Texas.
Well, folks, that was Stories Are for Fun and The Horse That Had His Picture in the Paper. Hope you enjoyed the story. In fact, folks, I hope you enjoyed all the shows I played today. If you didn't like Donald Duck and you felt like shooting him, more power to you, because I think I felt like doing the same thing. just to let you all know that there is a marathon coming up on Saturday, April the 30th, 2016. So you better be ready to tune in for that. It'll be a lot of fun. I'm going to let you go for now, but we'll see you again. Peace out, and have a nice evening and weekend.